Today I want to talk about the business of you. Capital Y, capital O, capital U. Maybe life would be better if we saw ourselves as a business. If we were a business, we would look at ourselves and our relationships with people, ideas, ourselves, differently, and perhaps with a greater sense of purpose. In any business, there needs to be a delivery of value through products and services. Right? There's a need on the end of the recipient chain, if you will, that we would be seeking to fulfill. Now, in business, each of us, in the business of you, each of us would be the main asset of that business. Why? Because without us, there is no you, there is no me, there is no business which we would be creating and delivering value through. When I was in the U.S. Army attending an elite military school in Colombia, South America, we were out in the field a lot. Now, it was dry. There was no real jungle down there, but it was, an appropriately difficult area. And I noticed that in some of our patrols, we would come across people buying water from people who had water springs. They had a bubbling up spring on the property. And so people would come from, I don't know what distance, with buckets, and they would fill those buckets with this beautiful, clear, fresh water that was coming from deep within the earth. Fill those buckets, pay the person, and then go on home with the water. Interesting. Interesting that you would have that. And I suppose it's no different than somebody who says, hey, I got an oil well on my property. And so I put an oil rig there and it pumps it out. Or, hey, I found diamonds on my property. And there was real value there. And I benefit from it. In a way, in that water scenario, divine energy in the form of that fresh water really was coming up, being used by some people as a business, and being used by other people to bathe and feed themselves and their children. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. But what if the business of you is similar? Divine consciousness could be using you and me as the distribution point, where the spring, if you will, from which divine consciousness is bubbling up and being offered to other people on the planet and other living things on the planet, animals, plants, trees, you name it. So maybe we are that spring, and that's what the business of you is all about, allowing divine consciousness to bubble up through us and provide product or service in order to make other people's lives better. Ernesto Siroli, his last name is spelled S-I-R-O-L-L-I. Ernesto Siroli, he's a guy who facilitates entrepreneurs. He wrote a book, I came across this book a half a dozen years ago, it seems, called Ripples from the Zambezi. Zambezi being a river in Africa. Ernesto Siroli was in humanitarian aid and worked in Africa, and he recognized that the failures of so much humanitarian aid was due to the fact that the people delivering the aid, you know, countries like the United States and organizations sponsored by us, were failing because they were using structures to deliver what they wanted to deliver, not what the end user needed or would accept or what fit into their cultural values. So we're trying to jam down American products and processes and procedures into these third world countries where the fit was terrible. You know, round hole, square peg kind of routine. And he just realized that trying to impose aid on somebody else that, number one, may not be even open to being helped, or certainly, in many cases, not open to being helped in a way that was contrary to their belief system and their values. And in those countries, corruption became the rule, as it does in many countries. And now all of a sudden, the value that was, in theory, being delivered to these people never really got to the end users. Food, medicine, all got stolen before it ever got down to the village level where the people were. After seeing that repeated failures, Ernesto Cerulli said, "Wow, I got to get out of here." He left humanitarian work and decided he wanted to work with a different group of people, entrepreneurs, people who had a vision already of what they could use their passions and their talents for. They wanted to make something happen. They wanted to create something. So they showed up with that fire, if you will, that spark of creativity and passion. He said, "That's who I want to work with." It's interesting. He started a business. He was in Australia. He's now in Canada, and he works in the U.S. and Canada, and presumably in other countries. And one of the rules of his organization is anybody who tries to motivate an entrepreneur gets fired. If an entrepreneur doesn't have their own motivation, they're not an entrepreneur. So to motivate an entrepreneur is like, that's a no-no. You can help an entrepreneur, but not in that area. They've got to have that fire within their talents, their passion, that impulse to express, to create, has to be there. So what Cerulli did is he decided to help entrepreneurs find the help that they needed to succeed. And it helped him to then, in that process, to clarify what a business does. And this applies to the business of you. He saw that being an entrepreneur was similar to a three-legged stool. The first leg of that stool was you had the development and the delivery of a product or a service. Development and delivery of a product or service. You had to have that aspect in an entrepreneurial venture. Secondly, you had to have the marketing and sales of the product or service that you just developed and presumably have the capability to deliver. And the third aspect, or the third leg of that three-legged stool, is you had the accounting of the costs that went into the production of your product or service and the accounting of the revenue that you got when you made a sale. So, those three areas, develop and deliver, market and sales, and accounting. He saw those as the three legs. And he recognized, you know why people fail in business? And about 95% of businesses don't make it through 5 years. He recognized that because the entrepreneur, the business owner, buys into the idea that they have to do all three of those areas themselves. If you try to do all three of those areas, now you've divided your energy and probably have devoted some energy into areas that you're not really that passionate about. So Cerulli's point was the entrepreneur needs to look at those three legs of a stool, right, that I just outlined, choose the one you're most passionate about, and do that. And then help or find somebody or two somebodies that would handle the other two aspects of the business. If you're an accountant and you love that sort of thing, then that should be where you focus your attention. Now you align yourself with somebody who will develop an idea that you have and deliver it. And you find somebody who will market and sell that idea that you have once it's been developed. And of course, if you're the sales-oriented person, you like, I got to find an idea. I got an idea, and I need somebody to develop it and deliver it, but I want to sell it. I want to sell it. And I'll find somebody else to do the accounting, and so on. Listen to these three words I'm going to say in a minute, and notice how they seem to be connected to Ciroli's description of being an entrepreneur. Being, doing, having. Can you see being, that state in which we really know who we are, what we like, what we value, and who we've become along the road of our lives where we've developed, and we have a sense of hope and faith that we're going to develop even more? Doesn't it seem like that's the development and delivery of the product or service in the business of you? It's you. And in my business, it's me. I learned early in my sales career that the first sale that needed to be made was when the salesperson sold himself or herself on the value of the product or service. You had to sell yourself that this was a good thing, this was a good idea. And if you didn't, it was much more difficult to present this to other people. You were reticent, you held yourself back, you were less than enthusiastic. You had to sell yourself on it first. The business of you requires the development of self-respect. Self-respect and appreciation of what you've experienced and learned in life. Your sense of being, and I capitalize that, capital B, your sense of being and your connection to your source of being are the foundation of the business of you. Without that, we're going to have a great deal of difficulty succeeding in life. The stories we tell ourselves and we tell other people and other people have told us about us, they either will strengthen or weaken our foundation. And of course, we're in a position right now to say, wow, maybe I need to revise the stories I have been telling myself. You bet. You bet. And more about that in a few minutes. Most of us have experienced shame in life that causes us to want to hide ourselves away from public scrutiny. And that's, you know, the Garden of Eden kind of thing. You know, as soon as they broke the rules, presumably they went, now I'm going to need to cover my private parts with leaves because I don't want to be exposed. I don't want to lose my, I have to cover up in order to remain private and safe. We have either shamed ourselves by saying to ourselves that we did something bad because we are bad, or we didn't do something good, which it consequently is translated into the reason I didn't do something good is because I'm bad, or somebody else has shamed us into that belief that we're broken and defective. And you can imagine the complications that can arise when you have a belief that the product and service developer is himself or herself defective. It's like, so what makes me think that myself as a product in the business of you is worthy of promotion and marketing? And it's going to make the presentation that is necessary of moving our energy out much more difficult and much more frightening. It is this area of being, and that's capitalized, that offers the greatest opportunity for us in creating the business of you. The better we feel about ourselves, what we've learned in life, and the potential value to other people, the greater our view is going to be of the possibilities for our business of you. It's like, oh man, I know a lot of stuff. People need to know this. I mean, I can help. I think this is, I've suffered pain and this and that and the other thing. And maybe I can help light somebody else's path and make it more comfortable, convenient, safer, more loving. One of the great problems of shame is that it distorts our view of who we are, and it distorts our view of life as well. When you look at those emotional states, the 10 emotional states that I talk about, starting at the bottom, shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, and pride, the ability to process information at those lower levels, that shame, is terrible. It's terrible. We're not seeing reality. We're not seeing the truth. Our interpretations are not trustworthy. You're in shame. You're looking at something. You're not seeing it. You're not seeing it. You're making it all muddy, all convoluted, all distorted. You're not seeing the truth. When we're in the clutches of shame, don't rely on somebody's reasoning and good judgment. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. The same is true of when we're in apathy, or grief, or fear, or lust, or anger, or pride. We're not seeing reality. There's versions of it, but it's not the one that's truly true. If our view of life includes images of pain, suffering, failure, embarrassment, sadness, humiliation, it's time to reframe those pictures. The business of you started at least at conception, depending on your beliefs, maybe way, way before, but let's just assume for a second it began at conception, and you have been growing ever since. If you view life as a starting point at conception, you can go, you know what? This is an epic journey. This is an epic journey. This is what movies are made of and great stories are told about. This is it, and I'm living it. And every one of us is on that epic journey. And we can upgrade our intentions while we're on it. Instead of trying to live a life without errors or pain or discomfort, we can decide that growth on every level, is the reason we're on the journey in the first place. I mean, some people think, I guess, that I'm on this journey so I can get to the end of it. It's like, what about in between the start and the end point, the beginning and the destination? What's that about? To get it over with as quickly as possible. That seems kind of silly, doesn't it? That's where the growth potential lies. Wouldn't it be sad to hear a child come home from school early in their schooling career and say with either pride or perhaps relief, "Mommy, Daddy, today was the first day of my kindergarten and I didn't make any mistakes." Or, "Mom, Dad, today was the first day of junior high and I didn't make any mistakes." The fear of making mistakes is the ego's way of trying to overcome a deep sense of abandonment and to try to reestablish a sense of belonging and connection. It's also the ego's way of trying to increase our security, our sense of safety. And it sounds logical, and maybe even ideal to imagine, if I never make a mistake, I have to be safer, I have to be more lovable, I have to be more acceptable than if I do make mistakes. So, I got it. I will try to never make a mistake. You can imagine that's a problem. Your ego wants you to be the best in every energy exchange you ever experience. Be the best, do the best, have the best. Making mistakes exposes the truth that we're not the best. We aren't. We really aren't. We're only human. And the ego doesn't find our humanness to be enough. And so it becomes unacceptable to be human, and it's only acceptable to be perfect which of course is unachievable, and so now we're guaranteed bad feelings and failure. In that hypothetical family situation that I just mentioned with the school child coming home, wouldn't it have been better if the parents had asked, "Sweetie, is there something you learned today that you want to tell us about? Something about your studies, whatever was taught today in school? Or maybe something about your feelings. What did you feel when you were hearing this or seeing this? Maybe you want to tell us about some of your classmates or even your teacher. What would you like to tell us that you learned?" You can see that opens all kinds of possibilities for that child to understand the purpose of education is about learning, increasing awareness, developing one's consciousness, even though you're not going to use those words on a school child. That's it. So their place in the world becomes more secure, more fun, more interesting. And ultimately, that school child is going to be involved in the business of you, just like you and I are. Christ says that humans learn through trial and error. That would mean the more trials you and I have had in life, the greater the opportunities we have had to learn. A person with no trials, to me, would seem to be a person that had very little learning opportunities. What did you learn? Nothing. What were your trials? Didn't have any. Wow. We could continue that and say the greater number of errors that we experience. Well, I tried this and whoops, that wasn't what I had in mind. I tried this. No, that didn't. That's not it. The greater the opportunity for growing our awareness. That extension of energy is absolutely essential to developing our consciousness. We don't extend that energy in a try to experience and learn from it. No growth on any level. If we were to revisit the timeline of our lives, and maybe that is I was conceived at this point, and I'm going to live to be 120. Now you know how long your timeline is. And so you look at that timeline and you plot it out. You put the trials, you note trial here, trial there, trial there, trial here, trial there. If we put those trials down, just by putting a point on it and then defining what they really meant, I believe that we would be on the verge of transforming our lives. Because if we reevaluate the experiences that we had that we have currently used to create our sense of ourselves, and we revise them, we upgrade them, we see them in a new light, we heal our beliefs, we change how we see ourselves, guess what? We would be new. We would be new. So, looking at that timeline, what trials did you face in life? Physically, what trials did you face in life? Emotionally, what trials did you face in life? Mentally, and what trials did you face in life spiritually? You start putting those things down on a timeline, you'd go, Man, oh man, there's a lot of opportunity for learning here. Yes, there is. So, what kind of trials? What does that mean? I would say that these trials would have been frightening to us. They would have been confusing. Some of them would have been painful, embarrassing, they would be disappointing, hurtful, and hurt-filled. There would have been probably a lot of sadness and regret in those trials. I don't know about you, but I noticed this mindset when I was in school. I knew, and I was good at this, is I would learn a subject just well enough to do really well on a test. It was almost like I acquired this information and I was going to do a brain dump during the examination, and which I put the answers on the paper and walked out of the room knowing that I was going to get a good grade. Afterwards, I've had this experience. A classmate said, "Tom, what answers did you put down for this question and that question and the other question?" And I was like, I don't know. I answered the questions, but I didn't keep a copy of the answers for myself. I just emptied my brain. It was like I held this stuff. I didn't really digest it. I just held it in my brain, and I regurgitated it for the test in order to get a high mark. And if that's what we've done with the trials that we've experienced, I had this experience, but I didn't digest it. I didn't look for the learning. All I know is it was embarrassing or painful or disappointing or regret-filled. And we're like, oh, you didn't digest it for the learning? No. Was I supposed to do that? I'm telling you, the business of you requires us to do this. We need to digest our experiences to extract the value from them. Otherwise, how is it possible to know anything? What did you learn? I don't know. Why? I didn't digest what I experienced. That's a problem. I would suggest that now is the time to revisit your life, maybe using that timeline, to gather the learning that you want and need for the business of you. Wouldn't it be wonderful here in 2016, or depending on when you're hearing this recording, to, you know what? I want to revise myself. I want to see what I can become. I want to continue to grow into this magnificent business. It's like, yeah, that's cool. I'm a fan of my framework called the 12 Worlds. Looking at things in as different areas of life. And basically, we can look at any activity and find that activity in one or more of these areas of life. They are spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, family, career, financial, social, leisure, community, political, and maintenance. Any activity that you're involved in is going to fit into one or more of those areas. And an activity that impacts positively two or three or four or five worlds, that's probably a real good investment of your time and energy. Consider this. Who you and I believe we are is holding us back from knowing who we really are. That may be a little bit difficult to get your mind around. It's like, I believe I know who I am. Period. End of story. No, it's not the end of story. It's just the first part of the sentence. Because who we believe we are is holding us back from discovering who we really are. Investing in our sense of being, again, the capital B, and learning about our connection to our source of being makes the wonderful unfoldment of the main asset in the business of you. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is a modified and pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. I've included Marianne in this because in my life, and even today, she is the true representation of love. Father, Mother, Life, and Marianne. You are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives and our family and our friends and our world into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.